This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. In this episode, our guest is Gal Aga, the CEO of Aligned. It's great to have you on.
Hey, Lizzie, Dimitri, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we're super excited to talk about Aligned and you and how you guys are doing. So let's just dive right into it and give us the elevator pitch of what Aligned is and does.
Aligned is a customer-facing collaboration platform for revenue teams, which moves the chaos of the back and forth over email attachments, links that you share throughout the process, into a single collaborative space with your buyers, which is also known as a deal room, digital sales room for sales, and client portal for CS, which helps solve complexity and helps just standardize a better process. And if we kind of go a bit deeper, basically everyone seems to be struggling right now, right? We have 4x number of stakeholders involved in deals. There's budget scrutiny that's greater than ever, longer sales cycle, and inconsistent execution. And I think like most sales teams are trying to look at it and scratching their heads on how to solve. But I think one of the biggest yet overlooked reasons that we lose is buying complexity, which basically leads to buyers avoiding salespeople who aren't helpful, or leads to just buyer indecision. Most buyers just had a hard time understanding why to buy, how to buy, how to go through this process, how to sell internally. And 77% of buyers say that purchases are just too complex, and 3 out of 4 actually, based on Gartner, prefer a seller tree experience. Doesn't mean that it's good for them, but that's kind of what this all results in. So, and if you look at the typical sales process, it includes hundreds of links and emails and attachments back and forth, which can lead to a lot of information just falling through the cracks, champions failing, not having everything they need in order to sell internally, people getting looped throughout the process and are not in the details, right? And next steps and lack of engagement. So basically, with Aligned, you just share a single URL. Okay, you replace the Gong link and the Loom link and everything with just one URL where you put all of these links. Throughout the process, you continue adding more resources and collaborate, and you just make buying so much easier. So that's one thing. Second thing, it's a better way to just project manage the deal with a purpose-built mutual action plan platform. Third thing is about accessing hidden stakeholders, people that typically get your emails forwarded to them.
Yeah.
So we see 40 to 60% more stakeholders. The fourth value proposition is about insights. So the first time that you have behind the scenes view into what your buyers are doing when you're not in the room. And lastly, it's about guiding sellers to follow the company's playbook. So
that's awesome. I'm excited to see it. I think about like when I'm purchasing a new tool or looking to work with a new vendor, I basically put together a Google Doc of like, why are we doing this? Here are all the materials. Here's the costs. Here's all the things that we're doing. And you're all over the map with it. It also sounds like I oversee our partnerships team could be really valuable for managing partnerships in addition to the sales process. So I'll be curious to dive into that a little bit too. Can you share how you started Aligned? How long has it been around and kind of what was the story to start the company?
I've been in sales my entire career. So we're two sales founders, actually. I've been for 17 years in SaaS B2B tech sales, built 4 sales organizations from scratch, was VP, CRO, did the 1 to 10 million ARR journey twice and the 40 to 100. So I've seen a lot of different challenges throughout the years, and really Aligned was born out of these challenges. And my co-founder and I, also named Gal, we work together at a company called Sight, and we're always obsessed with like a lot of other people, what makes the difference between the top performer and just the rest? Like how do we hire top performers? How do we coach top performance? And like I remember this like it was yesterday, basically one day, like one of our AEs, top AEs, just closed this unbelievable 440K deal in just under 90 days. And we were sitting there like in a Friday afternoon, it was a Friday signature, like the best one, you know, to kick off the weekend. And the AE director and I basically raised a toast, and we were kind of asking the AE, so what were you doing? What happened in this deal that you think was really different? And what she said was, I wasn't selling or basically offering a buying process that you'd pay a premium for, right? That was when it clicked. And we understood that the top sellers, the top 1%, are really anti-selling. They're not selling. It's about the pitch. It's about how do we support the process and how to create the best possible experience. And then a couple of years later, my co-founder and I just reconnected. I was the CRO with another company and he wanted to build a startup. And this aha moment basically was the inspiration. And we just said, okay, there's an opportunity. Things are getting more complex. It was just right after COVID. Everyone are just struggling. So how do we make a tool that will basically be like an Iron Man suit for the modern salesperson, where buyers starting to avoid salespeople more and more and things are getting more and more complex? How do we just get everyone? That's the vision. How do we get everyone to just be like that top performance?
Yeah, I like that. I think, you know, I often talk to sellers on my team and I'm like, stop selling, like just be consultative. You know, it's like there's a piece of relationship building. There's a piece of helping them and guiding them through things and really showcasing that like there's a value in using our product. And that is a hard thing to teach if it doesn't come instinctually. So I think having a tool that helps guide that process is excellent. So you started up right after COVID. Where are you in terms of your financing journey? And what's that look like?
Yeah, we basically started the end of 2021, started selling at the end of 2022, you know, kicked off basically a freemium product and then first sales at the beginning of 2023. We're now at the low millions going towards the 10 million mark, a series A. And yeah, just right now, kind of hiring really to go to market teams, about to double in the next few months.
It's exciting.
Excited about, yeah.
That is awesome.
That's incredible. It's super exciting. I'm assuming a lot of the financing and fundraising initially went into hiring a technical engineering team with two sales founders.
Yeah. So, I've never done marketing, so I had to learn that. So I think, you know, that career is just incredible, that career path. I think one of the best decisions that I've ever done was to take all of that go-to-market experience and go and be a founder. That's where most startups fail. So at the beginning, at least, right, you're just getting crushed in seconds because you don't know how to hire your first AEs. You're spending a lot of resources. But one thing that I was kind of missing personally is more of that marketing. So I just became a geek of marketing and eventually paid off. And we built a lot of the marketing we do is a lot around the pushing the narrative, posting on LinkedIn, founder brand. So we do a lot of that and that paid off. But other than that, everything else felt pretty familiar. And it was mostly just, yeah, nailing data, product engineering and all these areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do we want to dive into the demo?
Yeah, let's do it. What is the use case you want to share with us?
Maybe one of the most compelling ones would be the uncovering hidden stakeholders. So for that, I'll go through just the basics and we can show that a little bit and talk about the benefits.
Yeah, let's dive in.
All right. So Lizzie, since you volunteered partnership, then we'll run the demo on next roll.
I like that.
All right. So starting really with the basics, in order to understand that concept of, you know, failing to influence stakeholders, really the challenge, right? The challenge that I want to focus on is we send a lot of materials throughout the sales process and a lot of people get looped in at various points. At the end of the process, someone loops the CFO and the CFO gets a deck. We just have like this big slip deal that we just flipped. Because the champion just went to the CFO and, you know, we're sometimes not fully drinking our own champagne and was just trying to pitch the CFO in a really bad way. And we didn't build a proper business case, right? So there's that lack of access to these people and influence on all of these people that get involved at certain points of the sales process is what leads a lot of deals, especially today, right? We have SMB sales processes right now are 4 to 6 stakeholders involved. So like everything is complex. So really to kick off and understand the basics of how we can go and solve that problem, or at least help, not right, not by 100%. Let's understand the concept of the line. So really, in a nutshell, it is that one URL that you're seeing right here. I'm in preview mode and I'm seeing what the buyer sees that you share with your prospect. You just click on share and share a URL. I can go and see something like this in 10 seconds, or it will automatically open from a CRM, turning into an opportunity, for example, and then pull the logo, pull the right template per vertical, per partnership, for physics and beeps, enterprise sales, etc. And then from that point on, that kind of serves as that center of the deal, that the evaluation space where I do most of my follow-ups, not everything. We're not replacing email completely, but I do a lot of the follow-up from here. I do a lot of collaboration and engagement, which turns it really into where the deal leads. So for example, I'll go and share this after the first call. Let's say these tabs are hidden, okay? And I'll just send one email and say in that email, hey, it was great chatting with you. As promised, here's a link to the 2-minute demo, to a solution overview, a few case studies that were relevant. I can even go and link the specific area. And if they click on that link in that email, it will take them to that specific section. So I can do that in any area of the room. And that's already kind of me starting to organize everything in a much better way for my prospects in a, one place. So I'm helping drive trust with that team section that you've seen, that you saw at the top. It just helps consolidate and organize instead of four links that will get lost over email. There are multiple links in one place. And then throughout the process, I can start collaborating here. So let's say we get to a POC stage. A lot of companies introduce a mutual action plan when they start a POC. So I'll go and I'll share the screen during a POC planning conversation and start aligning on next steps. Okay. And maybe I'll go and maybe you and I haven't spoken before, Lizzie, and this is the first time. And we're talking about us doing some kind of a demo and we're agreeing on next steps. As you can see here, I can go and tag you. You'll get a reminder. So really different from a spreadsheet. It's much deeper and it's an actual collaboration tool. There's internal notes, think to the CRM. There are a lot of benefits during this here. And yeah, and as the deal progresses, like I mentioned earlier, the CFO will get a room where you're more easily collaborating with your champion to build a business case. The sales leader can go and standardize things like the business case. So there are a lot of benefits here. I don't want to get too much into the weeds and everything, so we can get to the stakeholder part. And then just one more thing to just show as an example. So let's say right now, you know, you're ghosting me, or I'm between meetings and I want to add value between meetings. So a lot of AEs, you know, have that big thread with a lot of people looking into that thread. And if you continue following up and no one answers, it's a little bit of you seem like that salesy person that's chasing. But if I have a room, I can just go and let's say we talked about a certain architecture solution that's going to solve the problem. I can go and unhide it. And I'll go and say, hey, Izzy, I thought this would be relevant. You know, I worked writing for email.
And that will push to my email.
Exactly. So the whole idea, buyers love Align the most. I think one of the biggest reasons that people go and sign up to Align and their biggest aha moment is when their buyers are telling them, wow, this is so incredible. This is so helpful. When a buyer tells you, wow, on how you're selling, not on what you're selling, your earning point. Like we've all lost so many deals on just a bad demo, bad discovery, bad experience. So having the opposite effect. Yeah. So you can now reply directly to that email. And that response will go into this specific section, which would allow any future stakeholder that looked into the process to basically have the context of an important previous conversation took place around the architecture.
That makes sense.
So you're creating essentially this collaborative environment where you're bringing the buyer into the process of creating a business case. You just don't give them the slides and say, hey, these are the slides, right? You want to ensure that they participate in this whole process. They ask questions and you're adding things and you forming this whole thing together. That's the kind of idea behind the solution. Is that right?
Yeah, the business case is the end game of a buying journey. And I would say not every salesperson would need to know how to really deal the business case. Maybe the more transactional SMB deals, it's a bit of an overkill. But this is just a way to organize the decision process. Okay, to organize the decision supporting materials for your buyers, to help them loop in others in an easier way, for you to stand out against the competition. And it's a great way to get engagement, okay? And then in addition to that, which we'll get to in a second, that allows you to get also benefits of a hidden stakeholder access and insights, which I'll show a little bit, and other benefits that we won't have time to go to everything, which is deal standardization and solving the mutual action plan spreadsheet that typically gets really bad adoption by buyers and sellers.
I see the great value here because I think there's a, to your point, I think it's hard to teach sellers, especially inexperienced or fairly young sellers, how to build a business case, especially for the CFOs. I mean, come on, it's not easy. But I think when you set up the process in that solution, I think you have a higher chance that you're going to start getting those inputs that will help you to shape this. And of course, you know, there's an element of visibility and transparency here. So your manager or manager of the manager can come in and actually help you to do this. So I see a lot of value here for the sellers that are trying to learn how to do this. Yeah. And then there's a nice way of collecting the different inputs, right? Which is another layer of complexity with building a business case, right? Every company is different. Every company has a different objectives, budgets, et cetera, et cetera. So whatever you do, you know, you're going to somewhat customize the deal, right? Especially when you're in a startup and, you know, maybe growth company or late stage venture, you know, you're definitely going to be on the back foot in terms of customizing more than not, right? So it's a great way to bring all of that together in one place,
yeah,
to give sellers an opportunity to learn and continue adjusting through this collaborative process. I mean, this is great.
You can essentially have a template. I mean, when I'm getting sold to, it's like, well, then I have to take everything I got on that call, go build a business case, go. And it's like, if the seller hands that to me, the deal's going to happen quicker because I don't have to take time in my day to do it. So yeah, this is a really cool feature of this platform.
Yeah. So you're touching a lot of what the sales leader sees, which is standardization.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get everyone to row at the same pace, right? And get all ducks in a row, so to speak, and execute the best possible sales process. So if I know that this is a good framework for a business case, and if and like you can all the time design which tab you open at which point and see what reps are doing, and reps really can see how other reps are selling. So that's another great way. But if you just look at it from a buyer, forget about the business case part of the deal for a second. If you just look at it from a buyer's perspective of, I'm now very conscious of that. I'm very focused on every time that I buy, like how many materials I get and how many areas I'm being followed up on. And I'm just not reading all of these materials. And a lot of salespeople just think that the problem that they're solving for is information starvation, which is not. It's information indigestion. I don't need more from you. I need better. I need short. I need to the point because I have so many things going on in this world and there's so much access to information is so easy. Help me digest it. That's facilitating the buying journey and that's creating an easier experience that would prevent me from saying, oh, this is too hard. There's so many things that I've been followed up with right now and I don't have time for this. So I'm procrastinating. I'm choosing the seller from the competitor that made things easier for me, or I just don't get it. And I decide to stay with the status quo indecision. So this is how it solves it, by helping consolidate and helping digest everything. And then also the benefits of allowing to follow up, standardizing business case, mutual action plan. We started this as I wanted to show the hidden stakeholders. So I'll do this real quick, just conscious of time. So all of this data, every time that someone enters the aligned room, we enrich the data, push it into the CRM. CRM is not connected here. It's just a demo example. And you get the understanding of who are these stakeholders that are entering your room. Okay. So without a line, an email gets forwarded internally. Different people are looped in and you don't know as a salesperson who is being looped in. With Align, they just have one URL, which means that everyone that needs to access these decision supporting materials are going to be looped into that URL. Yeah, so Certificial, for example, one of our customers has seen a 40% increase in stakeholders that they access in their deals compared to what they knew were involved prior. And that, of course, allows you then. And another thing is because they enter into your world, it's easier to go and reach out to them versus someone being CC'd on an email. You're kind of disrupting the email flow. But if someone went into your world, into this space, and it's a C-level VP, you can go and reach out. Hey, saw that you're now joined the evaluation. Typically, people in your role, these are the type of things that are interesting for them. Here's a link. If you need anything, I'm happy to hop on a call and show you more.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I like the way you're phrasing this. Just curious, speaking about analytics and data,
yeah,
what type of metrics your solution is impacting in the sales process? You know, there are typical suspects, right? The sales cycle, right?
Yeah.
Is this getting longer or is this getting shorter? Average deal size could be, right? If this is consultative, usually the result should be with a higher value as well. What else is this impacting?
Really, the bottom line is deal velocity, which is comprised out of, you know, what's the speed that you're closing, what's the win rate, and what's the average deal size that you're winning at. All of these affect by line, and we measure them separately. We look at more lower level leading indicators like engagement, access to stakeholders versus, you know, what I mentioned, like 40 to 60% increase, higher engagement in deals, buyer feedback. We look at qualitative, like buyers are just giving much better feedback and are more engaged. But really the bottom line is 30% or so reduction in sales cycle. We've seen consistently somewhere around that number, a 15%, 10% increase in win rate. Average deal size, we haven't measured a lot, but for sure impacting if you're building a stronger, you know, business case, facilitates basically a 6-7 figure deal versus someone pitching, hey, I want to buy this tool, right? These are the things. There is some time saving and there are some other benefits, but it's mostly really a way to drive better deal execution on top of just training. You can go and train your team and you can also bring a tool that will help them enable the champion, make a better case, increase engagement, access stakeholders, sell in a more data-driven way based on what's going on in the deal, standardize the sales process and leverage mutual action plans, which are proven, but we just make them work, right?
Yeah, so it sounds like quality of execution matters because it's impacting these deals, and 30% on the deal cycle, that's huge, right? Let's be honest. It's hard to cut this by 30% with anything. So quick question on the buying committee. Excuse me, I think you mentioned this, that you have the one URL that it goes and circles between the different teams. Do you see more engagement on the buying committee beyond the contact person, right? That's always a problem in the sales process because, you know, you always go through a champion. You always go through someone who says, I don't want you to contact my boss. I don't want you to contact anyone else. You're going to go through me.
Yeah.
But you're almost hitting the black box at some point because that person is not responding. I don't know, went for vacation, didn't tell you, and you don't know what's going on. And you still have a few people on the buying committee. So how do you make a readout? Do you see that there is a more activity coming from the other people beyond the contact person or champion?
I think that that's the first experience that AEs tell us when they start using Align, is that like they just start seeing a lot of these different people getting looped in some of these deals, and they see them going deep and some of them spending hours in rooms. Like the enterprise deals typically get 20 to 30 hours in a room, 10 to 20 people are joining the room. But I would say that another thing is the benefit of knowing when someone is not engaging and is blocking you is also a clear one. If, you know, the person you spoke with, you sent an email, right? And with email, you just know, hey, email open, email open, email open. What does that mean? But in line, we'll not tell you email open. We'll tell you invite shared with others. We'll actually tell you that your champion has completed the next steps that you've agreed on or not. No share, no enter, just the champion. How much time that champion even spend in that room? And we see the correlation, like the deals that are saying, we look at our deals over all the time. The deals that are 30 minutes, 1 hour, they'll never close. 30 minutes, 1 hour, more than a month, it's just dead. I'm looking at these three parameters and I know it's probably not going to close.
Okay, so that's a strong indication for the leader when they assess and then during the deal desk, you know, whether this deal is just someone is pulling because they don't have anything else, right? And they're just bullshitting each other on that process, or it really is just something they should disregard right away. So that's super helpful. I think on the analytical forecast front, I think it's helping a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of things here. I know that we can't cover everything and we wanted to make this focused. But yeah, a lot of sales leaders look at the analytics as a way to enrich the CRM, push automatically stakeholder data, engagement data to the CRM. It populates under each deal or opportunity in Salesforce or HubSpot. And then you can run reports and say, hey, let's look at how much time someone is at a stage and everything you typically look at, but also add stakeholders uncovered in aligned, engagement in aligned, and kind of drill down a bit more stage in the mutual action plan. Okay, it's completion in percentages of the mutual action plan. Okay, what a great addition to your forecast.
Okay, that's super helpful.
Yeah, and I want to know, like, I think we talked a lot about, like, the transparency for sales leadership to go in there. I would also think, like, it really helps sales enablement figure out, like, what's working and what's not working, and they can dig into these things, and there's time savings on both sides of those, whether it's forecasting or figuring out what to focus on with individual reps or a team broadly. Do you see other go-to-market teams utilizing the aligned? Like, are marketing teams taking things that are happening in aligned and using it in any marketing automation that they're doing? Are product marketing teams figuring out, like, oh, here are the ICP personas that we should be targeting? Like, are you seeing some of that happen?
Yeah, so we started with solving the execution problems, right? And then because this ties into content, then we now are completing more and more and more of the content problems and standardization and analytics, but we really start with the core. So we have a lot of the high spot seismic functionality also built in under the library. So you can go in an analytics and see like the content, right? And what performs best and what's being used the most and things like that in the room. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of that going on. So I would say basically people that are benefiting for this is the sales team, customer success. You didn't talk a lot about that use case, but speed up onboarding, shorten time to value. There's onboarding use case and there's the ongoing CS use case. You mentioned earlier partnership team. So for sure, there are two use cases for partners, either standardizing what your partners are sharing, making sure like partners are using the most up-to-date materials and that you control their lead generation or co-selling and effort. And co-selling, you can bring them into your room and execute together the deal. And the second one is internal partner management. So it's you and the partner having a room. Here are the deals and here's enablement material. So it's like an onboarding room for a customer, but you're doing onboarding for your partner and you're ensuring that you have best possible ongoing enablement because it's all connected to your enablement system. So that's partnership, sales, DS, some strategic SDR use cases as well. Marketing and enablement benefit from this from a standardization and content standardization and content analytics point of view, and the sales leader getting better execution, but also standardizing the sales process and forecasting.
Yeah, absolutely. When I look at the line, I'm thinking, and you mentioned this too, like, great for enterprise deals, but I'm kind of curious what types of customers are using Align. Do you see it being used in more SMB style sales as well? And what size of the companies are you typically selling to?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we look for is there has to be some kind of complexity. Okay, if you're closing over the phone in one or two calls and you're not sharing a lot of materials, then no need. You don't have to use it as a, like I use big words today, mutual action plan and the business cases. Like not all of our customers do this. For example, a deal, we have more than 500 users across all motions. from enterprise to the really high velocity sales. And the challenge that they have, for example, is that there's a lot of types of content being shared with a lot of different types of products and a lot of different buyer personas that they're selling to. So it can be that as well. So we need some kind of complexity. It can be in the number of products you're selling, the level of content and education needs to take place. It can be in the number of stakeholders involved, or in just the stages and the depth that you go into a POC, scope alignment, success criteria, if you have a lot of jobs to be done in collaboration with your prospect.
Yeah, anything beyond like product-led growth sales or like a pre-transactional sale, that makes a lot of sense. And who do you see, who do you run into most in terms of competitors? There's obviously other, what I would call like digital sales rooms. And then you mentioned like you have the functionality of a HiSpot or a Seismic, but who are you running into most when you're selling?
It's good news always when there are a lot that are trying to get into this market because it really validates the need. I think it's in Gartner right now, they're saying that it's still in hype cycle mode. It's not yet a quadrant, but it's the most likely revenue tech right now to enter an actual quadrant. And there's already an actual Gartner report outlying vendors. So basically the way that I look at it, there's the sales enablement, which is in brackets, it's a little bit ironic because the real way to enable sales is to improve their execution with their buyers. And most sales enablement tech, what it is actually, it's about efficiency of content. And it's about the internal training materials. So that space basically has a DSR feature. Rarely comes up in deals. I think I can count on one hand. And we're almost in like every kind of big deal right now is going on. We get covered. So there's that category, the Seismic and the HiSpot and all that space. Really basic feature. They're focused more on solving content management and selling more to marketeers and sales enablement. There are the proposal CPQ solutions. Some of them also enter the space and create a module. Also something that's pretty basic, and they're approaching, again, kind of trying to solve more internal efficiency problems. And then we have the pure players, which are really the ones that eventually get shortlisted, us and a few others. And yeah, everyone are pretty much same stage. We right now, I can say that we raised the most money and we're winning more than 80% of competitive deals. If you look at G2, Aligned is number one on both customer success and on sales. So there's a lot of things that we do in the product that differentiate us. And you know, you can, of course, speak to our team to learn more and get more involved.
On the CPQ, Salesforce and HubSpot, do you think that they're going to stop there because they want to have some functionality, or they're going to double down on the sales enablement? What is your take on that?
Yeah, I don't know what they'll do. Like HubSpot and Salesforce can enter any category, and they are, right? They're in Gong's category. They're in Seismic and HiSpot's category. They're in Outreach and Sales Loft, which is now Gong. Like it's all that revenue orchestration. So they have the sales sequencing. They have the CPQ. They have proposals. They have everything. Are they really, you know, disrupting all of these categories and are not letting the big players move? No. So, you know, it's just hard when you're all in one, when you're everything, with how much consolidation is a popular word these last few years. It's just hard to nail all of these separately. And both from a branding positioning standpoint and from a product excellence standpoint.
I think the Salesforce and HubSpot, they're trying to do this and areas at the basic level just to ensure that their offering can give something to the more enterprise customers. You know, enterprise customers, they don't like to have too many tools. They don't want to just be everywhere. So I feel like, you know, they want to have something that they don't look like they can fill the gap. But I think the depth and the quality of that might be debatable, right? Because if something is basic, it doesn't do us a lot of things.
Yeah, and I think in favor of this category is that this is the first time that a tech tool really touches the end-to-end execution of the sales process. It's the full execution, the full buyer-seller experience. So differently from a proposal that you share or a CPQ or a recording of a call, you get really, really into the details. You get really picky, okay? You don't compromise for the level of execution, for how you look in front of your buyers, and for the, like, the features really matter. Every small piece of the puzzle and the UI, UX, and the ease of use, it's how much your team will adopt it and how much your buyers will adopt it. And all these things are pretty hard to nail down. I can tell you that there are a few companies, very big companies, I won't name, that try to enter the category, played it a little bit for a few months, and then stopped and kind of killed the product because they saw they're just not getting into the shortlist. So I think that's something that's really, you know, I'm seeing as an upside for us being defensible, if we look at it from this way, and from this really being a standalone big category in the long term.
Yeah. Since you're going end-to-end process, it requires a fair amount of integrations and partnerships, right? Because you want to easily absorb in whatever's happening there. And also, I feel like, you know, Gong, for example, something that many companies are paying for, it's beneficial on the one-offs. They may be doing an implement team or sales managers are looking at it, but it's hard to really show the impact. So I'm wondering if some of these partners are actually seeing their tools being used and having more impact on the sales process and being able to leverage the data that you're able to provide for them. I'm just curious in general, like, how are partnerships going for you, both on the tech side and if you're doing any channel style partnerships, or what is the focus on in the future for partnerships?
Yeah, for sure. Partnership is going to be a big direction. Essentially, we're like a CEO of one of the demo experience platforms categories told me, like, I'm bringing like really important food, but you're the fridge, like the food cannot sit outside. And yeah, like if deals are going to move into these workspaces, then we can't have every vendor trying to have a link. So the most level of integration is that we have, by now we've uncovered 60 or 70, something like that, different tools that we know can be embedded into Align. And we've done some work with some of them. With others, we didn't have to do so much work. And then there are deeper level of integration. So like with Panadoc, there's a deeper level. With DocuSign, there's a deeper level. With Gong, you can push data from Align into Gong, and you can take data from Gong into Align without leaving both interfaces. Yeah, that's going to be a big direction. You know, you want to tie everything together. It's going to be a big benefit once we do that.
As you were going through the demo, I got super curious in terms of like product roadmap for you. I think you showed, and what we saw is like a lot of the functional use case of using that room to collaborate and add information into. But as you talk about like going, pushing data into your platform, vice versa, I feel like there's an opportunity to have some predictive AI, essentially. So like, okay, these things are mentioned on the Gong call. Make sure that you follow up with XYZ thing, or here are some questions. And so what is that part of the future of the product roadmap?
Yeah, there are a lot of areas, right? Like there's so much that we can do on what we call the core product, which is the buyer-seller workflow. Okay, like we want to have tables and forms and a dedicated mobile app, and to push things from Slack into Align and from Align to Slack. We have a Slack integration, but it's more for the alerts, but we want the chat really to live together in the room. So there's so much to do on what we call the core product and deepening the category.
Yep.
Then the benefit of the analytics is another huge direction, because we're essentially creating a new type of data set, right? That's not been analyzed before. What your buyers are doing when you're not in a room to be a fly on the wall on, like, it's not a doc send alert. We can tell you this person walked in, then shared, commented, added a next step task, looked at the business case for 15 minutes. The part that that person read was that. And then they looked at the certain comment. The comment has information about the negotiation that you had with legal. And then they looked at the Panadoc and didn't sign. And who's this person? It's the CFO. And now all of this data, okay, bring reasoning from GPT and RAG capabilities, which basically create like a layer of how do you analyze, you build a lot of logic and layers of how do you analyze all of this data. And let's bring also data from email and data from other platforms. That's going to allow very smart and interesting capabilities in terms of here's the next step in the deal. Here's what you should do next. And that also can drive automation, and that can also drive not only AI predictions, but AI actions. Right now we have a buyer assist in the room. Here we're the only vendor that has that, like an AI buyer assist that takes all of the red data in the room, reads into your company website and other materials that you plug it into, like your messaging and everything that you want to plug this into. And it can answer your buyer's questions directly. When your champion is right now struggling in front of the CFO, they can go and pull the room and ask questions. Okay, so all of this data also can drive actions in the room. So there's really a lot there. And we talked also about the integrations.
Yep. There's endless things you can focus on for sure. That's why I was curious about it.
Yeah, so it sounds like this is very interesting that you're talking about like enabling people within the organization to sell on behalf of you, essentially. It's almost like having the internal agent that you enable, and that person can have an easier job done, right? Because that's really what it narrows down to. I mean, I was describing this earlier when the champion is just the gatekeeper at the same time, because that person doesn't want anyone else to involve and disrupt the process, right? Probably that's what it is. But now you're talking about, hey, we can take this to the next level and enable them to the way that their job is super easy, right? I have a question regarding the customer retention and how you see the customers responding. You said that, you know, G2, your number one solution in that, you know, category. What do they say when the renewal is coming on your end and you're talking to them about that?
Yeah, customers, you know, when they renew, of course, there are a few that didn't renew. You know, not everything's perfect. But I think that the feedback that we typically hear is, our sales team love it because of the engagement that they get from buyers. They just feel that they're influencing the deal more, and they just get a lot of positive feedback, and positive feedback really helps them differentiate. They tell us a lot of stories about how they want a certain deal because they shared a room at this point of the quarter and their CFO entered and they multi-threaded, or they shared something that helped the champion close their biggest deal. So they have a lot of these win stories. The ones, of course, that measure things have measurable, you know, improvement from stage one to stage two, sometimes improvement in cutting POC cycles. So if they implemented mutual action plans successfully, then that's like a big thing that they'll talk about how they cut down like the POC to one ratio, for example. That's something that we hear a lot. AEs typically talk about the insights the most. They get addicted to how Align makes them look, how professional the buyer feedback. They just get addicted to that feeling that you're being validated as a good salesperson that's giving a good experience. And we know how that feeling translates to result, but they can really ride it in a feeling. And the second thing is they say it's like a sixth sense. I can't leave right now without going and digging into each day and seeing who entered and how much time and what they did. It's like now knowing these things, I can make decisions throughout the sales process that I couldn't have before. And that's what they really get hooked on.
That's where it's proving the ROI, right? Like I think every single tool that is right now facing renewal has to prove the indispensability and also the, you know, the clear ROI. So in your case, sounds like it's a very easy thing, because they see the benefits over 12 months or whatever term of the contract that they signed. So that's a great to hear. That also means that you guys have a bright future growing that install base. So that's a good thing.
To me, it's kind of like that. Me and Demetrius talk about this all the time of like all these AI tools coming out, and like my inbox is just littered with AI written emails. And this is the antidote to it, of like really thoughtful, consultative sales process. Now, some of that is trying to get my attention, right? And that's more on the marketing automation side, and it's a different problem to solve. But you're really, as you guys think about AI, you're really thinking about it in terms of like, how do we aid the salesperson? And this is all when people are worried about losing their job. I'm like, no, you're just going to spend your time doing really thoughtful things instead of tactical things. Like, you're not going to have to go and check all these places and then make a decision. The AI will check it all and then make a decision. So I'm curious from your perspective, like, how do you see the future of sales, the trends with AI coming together. And are you on, you know, my side with that kind of approach, or do you have different thoughts about it?
I think that everyone wants the easy button, right? And they're looking for the easy button. I think that AI SDR is getting hyped because of that. But I do kind of personally, I don't want to hurt anyone, but I personally think that there's a lot of hype there at the moment. Maybe it will do better, but there's also a philosophical question there. Is it's all a war of attention. And if everyone's getting, if average is here, okay, if it goes up from SDR is just doing non-personalized emails to personalized emails at scale, and if it's the same level, even if it's the same level, then if there's going to be more of what everyone's been doing, then I'm not going to answer what everyone's been doing. So now they're going to reach a plateau, right? So I don't know if to call it philosophical. There's a deep kind of strategic dilemma here on where this will go. And I understand where it's driven. It's driven from that easy button. So what I do think that the safe bet is for anyone that's building AI and anyone that's implementing AI is to try to leverage it. I think you cannot afford to not leverage it. We're doing every 2 weeks at our company, and we're sharing use cases of how people are using AI in different departments. And the way that I see kind of the future salesperson, it's like, it's a big part of our vision, really an Ironman suit. Like I'm getting so many like account research, follow-ups, decision-making, data-driven understanding of forecasting and everything. Execution is really semi-automated for me, or the repetitive things, maybe if I want to automate them and I trust the AI to do it, I will. So I think that buyers are open to buy higher ACV self-serve. I think we're going to see the transactional, the lower, the four-figure and five-figure deal sizes. I think we're going to see them being replaced. But I just can't put into my mind how a world's going to look like when something is going to... I just can't. Like,
No one wants to buy a product that's over $100,000 via AI, or that being a big part of the process. So, or something that's complex that needs to be sold internally. Well, I think I want to shift over to our kudos round. So you've mentioned a bunch of partners that you're working with, but any other companies in the space that you want to call out that you think are doing really interesting or cool things?
Yeah, absolutely. So two ones that come to mind. One is SenseSpark. I think they're just killing it. It's crazy to see companies going into a category that has players like Loom and Vidyard and just are getting and becoming top of mind and coming from the angle of AI, and Bethany and the team, everyone there are doing a great job. Another one is just, wouldn't surprise anyone, but it's just I have a lot of admiration for everything they've done in the go-to-market, which is Clay. It's just like a perfect combination of a technology with the right go-to-market that fits the technology with how agencies get value from bringing their services on top of Clay, and how that's being leveraged to create a community of Clay automation options, right? I don't remember how they call it exactly, Claybooks, I think. And that also benefits, and sharing on LinkedIn benefits the agencies because it makes them look good and it makes it look sophisticated, and LinkedIn loves the how-to content. So that's incredible. Yeah.
You're probably the sixth or seventh person that's brought up Clay in the kudos round, which is great. I've been dying to get them on the podcast. I think it's a very cool tool. So I like both those shout outs. And then last but not least, I want to hear your top tips for anyone based on what Align's doing.
Something that's just up on mine I recently posted about is Excellers love to show off ROI numbers, right? Like here's the top case study, or like, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes. I've purchased more than $2 million in SaaS, and I just never trusted any ROI number. Like it's typically something you see next to a proposal or someone sends you a calculator, right? But I do think that selling with ROI is something that is valuable and can be done, but you really need to be strategic and very thoughtful about how you do it. So if I'll go and break it down into how we'd go and approach something like this, I think that one of the biggest mistakes is they go into the ROI discussion because before they really have done deep understanding of my business. Like if you don't really understand a critical problem and a root cause of problems, and what's priority right now and how much is not fixing that problem, how much is that costing me, then going into ROI just doesn't make sense. Where did that number come from? The second thing is about quantifying the buyer's problem first. So the fact that they Acme 10x their pipeline through your technology doesn't mean that I will. So help me understand, what is the cost of me not solving the problem? And what it would be the cost of me not making an action, cost of inaction, right? If I continue not solving the problem, then we have something to talk about around ROI. And I think another thing is, a lot of salespeople kind of think about this and they pitch things without really making sure that a product, when you're selling a product, it has to solve a root cause. You're not solving really a problem. I'm not solving a win rate and sell cycle like Gong. Everyone are solving win rate, sell cycle reduction, like a lot of different tools. But we would be a good solution if you really are struggling with the back and forth and things get lost in email. AEs are struggling to sell internally. There's a MUBEC writing problem. So you need to really know how to isolate the root cause and only then discuss ROI. And once you've done these three things, you really understood my business, you quantified a problem and you validated that you can solve the root cause, then go and create believable scenarios based on the cost of inaction, based on that impact, and make that impact like the best case scenario and work backwards for it and show me like a worse and a worse and a worse scenario than that. I think that's how I would approach ROI. And like, it does more damage than good just go and put an ROI number next to an app, a proposal, or a spreadsheet without doing all of that.
I love those tips. I think it requires a lot of deep discovery work, which is really important. I always think it's so funny when I get off an initial call or a couple calls in and someone's like, can we have a case study? And I'm like, sure. But like, how much is that going to help in this process? So I really like that approach to ROI. Well, thank you so much for coming on this morning and chatting with us. It was really fun to learn more about Aligned and kind of the background of it and how you guys are helping teams with their sales process.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed the discussion. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.